Hello, hello, and welcome to season two of Healing Fucking Sucks, y'all. We made it to season two. And today on the show, we have Miss Beanie Chalfant. She is the first guest for season two. I'm so excited to have you here, Beanie. Beanie is a DV and a narc abuse recovery coach. She just launched her Breakthroughs with Beanie coaching. She's doing one-on-one coaching, right, Beanie?
That's right. Just this week.
That's so exciting. You did, yes. Like a couple of days ago. I was like, yeah, you go, Beanie, go.
Yep. Been a long time coming.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's crazy how these journeys that we have, you know, lead us. We were talking yesterday how these journeys with these narcissists that we've been on have led us on these journeys where now we're helping so many different people heal, and we're in a spot in our life that we did not see coming, but in the best way possible.
That's right. I never dreamed that this is, you know, what I would be, you know, inspiring other people, you know, about, but it is what it is.
Same. I never in my life thought that I would be helping abuse victims of any kind. I thought I was going to be just forever making movies and, you know, in the entertainment industry. And this is by far one of the very last things that I thought I would be doing, especially going back to college at a very late age in life and studying psychology so I can get like a real, you know, degree, which is really hard to do. But I'm doing it, and I'm not going to lie, I'm hating mostly every second of it, but it'll get better. y'all, Beanie has a very wild, and I'm going to say aggressive story behind her narcissistic abuse. So, trigger warning, y'all, we are about to get into some pretty serious abuse across all boards. So, if you have any kids in the car, this is not for children, so put this baby on pause and revisit it later. But let's jump into it. Beanie, where did all this start? How did you meet your abusive narcissist? And, you know, let's just go through your journey here.
Yes. You know, it was all so stereotypical for me. I met the man that abused me in a gym. He was very charismatic. He showed me extra attention. We became friends. I ended up hiring him. Our lives kind of, you know, became enmeshed pretty quickly. And he was all the things. He was all the things that, you know, my ex-husband was not. And, you know, he was boisterous and he was very verbal and he complimented and things just progressed really, really quickly. And, you know, as it happens often, I think with narcissists, that love bombing stages start. That love bombing stage started quickly, and it was all the love languages in excess. You know, it was, you know, words of affirmation. It was acts of service. It was physical touch. It was all the things, gifts, trips, like all of it. And it felt good. And, you know, at the time I had come from a very naive background. I had married my high school sweetheart. I had been with him for 25 years prior to meeting this man. And we had two children together, and you know, my marriage was on the rocks. I was not happy in my marriage. I was a stay-at-home mom. Before that, I was a first grade teacher. I kind of did everything by the book, married my high school sweetheart, you know, graduated from college, was a first grade teacher, had children, stay-at-home mom for many years. I had lost a baby. I had lost a little boy, and that was kind of the demise of my marriage. Things kind of started to go, things started to go downhill from there. And
that's hard.
You know, my husband was, he's a good man. He wasn't a good husband for me, but he was a great father to my children. And so I don't have bad things to say about him, but we just kind of grew apart. And so that just kind of gave an opening for this man to come in. And I fell for all of it, like hook, line, and sinker. I fell for it all. And, you know, I knew that something was up with him. I knew that he was different than anybody else I had met. But I chalked that up to my naivety. I chalked it up to the fact that I had, you know, really only been with my then husband at the time. And that I kind of lived in this little bubble, and I lived on the same street that I grew up on. My sister and her children lived on that street. My mother lived on that street. We had family dinners on Sunday. Like I lived in this little bubble. And so when this abuser came into my life, that bubble popped. And so I just thought, wow, this is really what the world is like. And he was able to convince me of so much. And so, yeah, things progressed quickly. And, you know, the first time that, you know, I remember him, I think he spit in my face was like the first kind of abuse that had happened. And I remember just being like shocked. Like I had never in my life had anybody treat me that way before. And I was floored. But then what came after that was so amazing. You know, it was like he, you know, the apology and everything that came after that was like, oh, this is who he really is. And this is the potential that I see in him. And so I was always chasing that. I was always chasing that little window of apology. And, you know, come to find out that the man that spit at me is who he really is. And, you know, the apology guy was an act. That was just to get me to the next level. So things like that happened often. You know, it started out with spitting in my face, and then, you know, it was, you know, cussing at me, and then it progressed, and, you know, it moved to, you know, physical abuse. You know, probably worth mentioning that this man was a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He was a high level athlete. He was extremely strong. He spent his entire life in the gym. I had no recourse with regards to physically protecting myself. I didn't own a gun at the time. I lived in California. So different, you know, different there. Not the case anymore here in Florida.
Yeah.
Not the case here.
We're on
in
the
Florida.
East Coast now, baby. People carry open arms around here.
Yeah, right.
If you see that in California, you're like, run. Run for the border, right, my friend. But it's just so like, okay, like I'm going to the store to get a soda. Oh, there's three people with guns on their belt. Cool. Here. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Big difference. So,
Beanie,
so,
let me ask you a question real fast.
Yeah.
So prior to your meeting, I'm not going to even say your, because we're not supposed to claim these people anymore. Yes. So the narcissist, prior to meeting this narcissist, had you experienced or grown up in any type of abuse previously, any kind of trauma there?
None.
No,
I had none. No, I mean, I didn't. My father was not really around. He was not really a part of my life. But I was raised by a single mother who is just kind and supportive, and she worked her ass off to raise three children by herself, and she was not abusive. And so the answer to that is no. I didn't witness abuse. I was not a part of abuse. I did not know the red flags of abuse. So this was all very new to me. And I think that's kind of different. You know, I think a lot of people that become part of abuse have a history of it in some way. But I can tell you from my experience, it was not having it that I think allowed me to not recognize what was going on. And for the same reason that I think a lot of people say that it was what was familiar to them. For me, it was unfamiliar, but I was game. Like I was ready for something different because I felt like, you know, I had a decent upbringing with a mother that was very present.
I would say though that not having a father that is around affects you psychologically on a level that maybe you weren't aware of. And a lot of times, my father was absent in my life once my mom had moved us from the state that he lived in. I saw him one time before he passed away. And I was 21 when my father passed away, and I was 12 years old when I had moved away from him. And even before then, they were already separated. So like we saw him every other weekend, and that was if we wanted to. We weren't like always forced to go. And sometimes I wouldn't want to go because it was boring. He lived out in the middle of the country. There was nothing to do. I've always been a city girl. Like, give me Starbucks and like places to go shop. I don't want to go outside and stare at trees like all day long. Right. Like that's just how I was.
Like this.
But well, no, I love it now. And if I could show you where I'm at right now, like last night I was outside on the porch with literally a bear. I went to take my dogs outside, and I look up and I'm like, I go, holy fuck, Yogi's out here. And I was like, get inside. I'm like, there's a big ass bear's outside. And I'm loving it now. But when I was a kid, I still have ADHD. I just know how to like manage it a little bit better. But like I needed to like constantly like be doing something. I couldn't just sit and chill. But when we grow up with that void of not having that steady father figure in our life, we will always kind of be searching subconsciously without even knowing it to fill that void. Because, you know, I don't think that we were supposed to live life that way without a father or without a mother. And so oftentimes that does create trauma within us. So I wouldn't say that I don't know a single person that has literally not grown up with any type of trauma, Beanie. So there's definitely trauma. There's some trauma there.
I guess I would say that I didn't have any like. There were not any big events. There was not like this. There were not. I wasn't abused. I didn't have things that affected me on a daily basis. You know, my life without my father, like I didn't know any different. And so that was just my life. So I understand what you're coming from and what you're saying. I'm sure that not having a father figure in my life had a lot to do with the fact that I accepted the things that I accepted for as long as I did.
Yeah. But regardless, you know, if you, so you and I are like on opposite ends of the pole. Like I grew up with every kind of abuse that there were, and I still didn't see the red flags from the narcissist, and I have dated three of them. Okay. Three. First one when I was 19, the second one when I was 25. And the last one was when I was 32, 33. And it's still all the same. The excitement, right? They seem to be so exciting. Right. And I don't know. We're drawn to that situation. So tell the, cause I know your whole story, Beanie, and it's freaking wild. So I don't, you don't have to like downplay anything here. You have some crazy footage on your TikTok and stuff of the narcissist that you dated doing some crazy stuff. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about like, how were you even able to sleep at night? This guy was like breaking into your house. This guy was stalking you. This guy was following you. This guy was threatening you. Wherever you tried to run and go, there he was.
Yeah, you know, it took me, it was about year seven that everything kind of fell to pieces. Year seven was when all of his infidelities kind of came to the surface. I had him arrested for the first time. You know, he now threatened what was up me for? With a baseball bat. Yeah, his very first arrest was an accidental arrest. I pretended to call 911 because mm-hmm. he was being abusive to me in my home. I had locked myself in the spare bedroom. He knocked the door down. He kicked the door in. He threw my computer at the door. He was being very physical with me, you know, throwing drinks in my face, getting in my face. And even before that, there were many other confrontations that we had together. Like I have been kneed in the stomach. I was pushed into the bed frame and, you know, messed up my collarbone. He would lay in wait. He would, I would leave the house to try to de-escalate a situation. And I would find myself sleeping in my car on the side of the road because I was afraid to come into my house. And then I would come to and be like, oh my gosh, I am 40 something years old. And here I am on the side of the road in a random neighborhood trying to sleep because I'm afraid to go home. And so I would say, yeah, fuck this. And so I would go home and he lay in wait. He was behind the door. He would lock the front door. So I had to go to the back door and he would lay in wait behind the door and attack me from behind and, you know, put me in a chokehold or, it was every kind of abuse. And in the midst of all of that, there was sexual abuse that was kind of periodic throughout. Towards the end that became more prevalent. But that very first arrest was an accidental arrest, and I had called the police, or I had accidentally called the police. I tried to show him that I was going to call, and then I accidentally hit send. And the police came, and of course, somebody had to be arrested. They took him away, and of course, you know, who bailed him out? I did.
You did.
Of course I did. He calls me from jail. Up to this point, I had no experience with the law. I had never been in trouble. He had had many experiences with the law. And so he knew exactly what to do. And so I had threats from him coming from, you know, from jail and, you know, how I needed to bail him out. And so anyway, that was about year seven that happened. And then, like I said, all of his infidelities began to kind of surface and things that I had, thought were happening all along, but never had proof of kind of, came out into the open and, you know, everything progressed. You know, he threatened me with a baseball bat. He would stay out all night and come home and, you know, and I would kick him out and then he would disappear for days on end. And then he would threaten that he better be back in the house and he would threaten my children. He would knock on my door at all hours of the night. He would threaten to rape me if I didn't open the door. Well, no, he threatened to hurt my children if I didn't open the door to let him have his way with me. That's more in line of what happened there. But that happened often. You know, he would threaten, you know, sexual abuse. And if I didn't allow it and I didn't say yes, then he would threaten to hurt my children. And so, you know, towards the end, we had this cycle of, it was usually about a 10-day cycle. I would take him back. He would be back in my house. Things would be fine for 2, 3, 4 days. And then he would just flip his shit over, I don't know what, you know, anything would set him off. I would end up kicking him out. I would go no contact. He would be fine with no contact for a couple of days. And then he would start to threaten me and stalk me and, you know, break into my home while I was, you know, in bed asleep and attack me while I was in bed. And that's the video that you see, online is, you know, my only recourse at that point was my phone. I knew that he was on his way in. I could hear him coming through the window. The front of my house was the only exit. It was an apartment, so I had no exit to the back. And so I thought, you know, the police aren't going to help me at this point. I just need to show him that I'm videoing exactly everything he's doing. And that's my only recourse. Yeah. And it worked for me. It worked for me. And I started to do that a lot. I have years of footage of him, you know, doing horrible things. And not just footage. I have audio recordings that I really have not, really put those out there on the internet, but, you know, screenshots of him threatening to kill me and rape me and hurt my children. And, you know, I also had, restraining orders on him, multiple restraining orders on him. And those seemed to make my situation worse. Restraining orders were not helpful for me. And he would
stalk me even worse. In a lot of cases, they are not.
Yeah. Yeah. He would, he had a burner phone and he would call me from the burner phone saying, you know, I like the jeans jacket you have on. While I was in my house, he was, you know, looking at me through the window. He would drive up next to me on the road and he would, you know, do this to his, you know, throat, saying that he was going to slit my throat. He would have a ski mask. He would have a ski mask and he would drive in my complex at 4:30 in the morning, in another woman's car, you know, stalking me. You know, I got up super early for work. And so he knew my schedule. So wearing a ski mask. So he would, you know, be waiting for me as I walked out of the gym, with the girl he's with now driving the car. She would help him stalk me.
That is so wild. That is wild.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so we have to back up just a little bit because I number one, I want to hear about how, like, all of the other supply, like, how did you find out about them? Did they come to you or did you get in his phone? How did that play out?
So the other, you know, his current supply, the woman that I believe he's still with, I'm assuming he's still with her. She was in the picture from the beginning and she was a very, very unassuming supply. Not somebody that I, you know, visually would have thought that he would go for. She had 3 children. She was married. She was, you know, she wore glasses. She was a little heavy, like, I would have never assumed that she would have been, you know, a threat to my relationship. But turns out
that narcissists don't have a type.
No, they don't.
Their type is, do they have a vagina and a heart?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Well, I know that now. So, you know, I I attempted early on, I attempted to contact her. Like I think most people do at the beginning, you're in shock. You can't believe what's happening. And I did attempt to contact her, and I told her that, you know, she should be really, really careful. She had three young children at the time. And you know, it was of no help. You know, she most often would not respond to anything. And then I stopped contacting her. Or at the end, when I knew that he quite literally was going from my house to her house. And he was doing that every week. You know, he would live at her house. She knew about me all along. She knew that he was living with me, but I never knew about her until
what a,
you know,
sick person. Many years. I mean, I feel sorry for her.
Many years
like
later.
You have to have such a low self-esteem to allow something like that to happen. So you know what?
I've had the gamut of emotions when it comes to her. And what I've settled on right now is that I feel just incredible pity for this woman. My heart aches for what likely she is going through, because quite possibly it's probably worse than even what I went through with this man. She opened a business with him. He lived with her and her three children. So I have a lot of pity for her, and I am really grateful that I am not in that position anymore. But that was a hard thing to come to.
I'm sure they sit around and listen to all the stuff that you do now.
Yeah.
They're probably like that. They're the user like 49820 that like adds you on TikTok or whatever, and they watch all your stuff. You know, that is like their nightly tea. They're just sitting there like watching like, what did Beanie post today? And you're like fucking thriving. So snooze you lose, fuckers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I can tell you this, that it took a really long time for me to get to the point where I truly believed that my thriving was my biggest revenge on him. I struggled. I struggled with really wanting vengeance. That is part of the reason that I went public with everything, and why I posted that very first video of his face and his business and his name. And so part of it was being vengeful, but the other part was that I was taking my power back. I had been just gripped by this man for so long, and I had been afraid of everything that he had threatened. You know, he threatened my life, my business, my reputation, my family, everything. He threatened everything. And those threats kept me paralyzed. And when I finally outed him, it was like this monkey off my back. And it was like, oh my gosh, I can breathe. And like, okay, motherfucker, try. Mm-hmm. Now try.
Yeah.
Now try, because the whole fucking world knows who you are.
I did the same thing. Except for I went a little bit more deep. I put together all of these videos, screenshots, messages with dates and times and everything. And I personally, I'm not going to tell you how, because I am Harriet the fucking spy. And this guy is terrified of me because I can find anything out. I can contact anyone. And he knows that. And I personally sent everything out to not just his family, but also his ex-wife's family, because she was a part of all of it too. So you know what? Fuck y'all. You lose.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I can tell you that in the beginning, there was that feeling of like, you know, fuck this dude. But I have come to realize that that's not what's helping me anymore.
Helping. No, what's and helping, it doesn't.
Yeah. What's Yeah, what's helping me is, and this is actually, you know, I've had a little, not everybody agrees with this, but I don't forgive this man. And I struggled with this in therapy for a long time. I struggled with the idea of forgiveness.
I've seen your videos.
Yeah, I've struggled with it. And not everybody
come for you on those.
Everybody agrees. And that's okay. That's all right. I personally don't need to forgive somebody who he's not apologetic for what he's done. He continues to do what he did to me, to others. And you know, everybody's going to say that, you know, the forgiveness isn't for him, it's for you. But here's the thing. I don't fucking need it. I don't need to forgive him to feel like I have moved on. And so I am at peace with everything that I have forgiven myself. Now that I have done, because there was a lot of shit that I did that hurt, you know, that hurt a lot of people. I did a lot of things while I was in survival mode, that are not,
we all do. To my it's character. It's called reactive abuse. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So these things were
and
not
that's okay.
You know, to my character.
What I find interesting though is I think you just have a different perspective that maybe you don't realize that you have when it comes to forgiveness, because for me, that was the only way that I could move through it. So it's different for everyone. And I just think you have a different perspective on it. And I don't think you're right or wrong on that. As long as you are at peace, you know, and you're a good person and you're doing great things now and you're helping people out, you know, whatever your process is, it seems to be working for you. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I don't, it was just, like I said, it was something that I struggled with. I kept saying to my therapist, I don't know what it looks like to forgive him. And so that's what I came up with. And I don't need it. I don't need it to move on. And, but I am a very forgiving person. If somebody wrongs me and, they don't continuously wrong me, I am more than happy to forgive. I forgive a lot of people for a lot of things. But in this instant, not happening.
You not know, for me. I think it works kind of like this, because I don't forgive the people that, like, the actions that the actual people have done to me over my entire life, the abuse. I can't forgive those actual actions. But what I could do was release that negative energy and the hatred and all of that that I was holding inside myself, that was keeping me in a constant, very low vibration mentally, energetically. That, of course, was, you know, affecting me mentally, physically, spiritually, all of that. I was able to let all of that go. And for me, I think that's what a lot of people consider forgiveness for someone else without, because, like, you don't even have to tell those people that you forgive them or any of that stuff. So realistically, that really doesn't even make any sense, because if we say that we forgive somebody for a consistent abuse, it wasn't like somebody just did something one time and then they learned their lesson and moved on. No, these people consistently abused over and over and over again. And it would be really naive and dumb of you to just be like, oh, I forgive you for doing all those things. It's not that. It's the release of all of that negative toxic energy that's gotten inside of you, that hate, and letting it go so that you can go live your best life and let those people continue their toxic behaviors, and they're never going to change, and just, you know, let them do them because they're no longer your problem.
Yeah. I think the word releasing is, you know, more conducive to my thought process than the word forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Beanie, let's talk about the sexual abuse. Obviously, we don't have to go into great detail about it, but I do want my listeners to understand that even though you are married or in a relationship with someone that, sexual abuse can still happen, you know.
Yes, it can. And it did for me, throughout the course of, you know, the decade that I was with him. You know, he made it a point to use sex as a tool to make sure that, you know, he got what he wanted. And then he used it as a weapon. And he would, like I said before, he would threaten the lives of my children if I didn't open the door to my home so that he could have his way with me. And I have text messages that I've shown on social media that show exactly what he said. And, you know, I would be torn. And sometimes I would open the door and just let it happen in fear that he would actually harm my family. And then other times I wouldn't. And it was something towards the end that he used quite often that would happen. And, you know, I was a broken woman at the time that this was all happening. And so I don't know. I didn't know then what I know now. And, I felt
well, you know,
helpless.
Beanie, don't...
I felt like I didn't.
You don't have to, you know, say that you were broken, because this person broke you down. This person put you in a position where you have children, and as a mother, you know, you want to protect your children, and you were put in a position where you didn't really have a choice. And, you know, that's what these people do. And it's all about manipulation and, you know, the fear base. And like, you know, you are not broken before this person, like, literally broke you down. Like, you did not see this coming. So I don't want you to, like, put that back on yourself in any kind of way. This happens in a lot of relationships. And, it, you know, I was sharing one of my situations with a friend that is a lot younger than me a couple of weeks ago. And I was talking about how I was in this one relationship that was still abusive. It just wasn't with the narcissist. I don't know what he was. Maybe a psychopath. I don't know. But how he would come into the room when I was asleep after working a really long day and start having sex with me while I was asleep. And I would wake up to this person having sex with me while I was asleep. Okay. And my friend was like, "Oh, that's just called surprise sex." And I was like, "No, it's not. It's called rape." These things are called rape.
Yeah.
You know, and you were literally just trying to protect, you know, your children among everything else. And the times that you did open the door and allow it, you know, that literally shows what kind of person you are. And you are really, really fucking strong, Beanie. You are. Because that sexual abuse,
well, thank you,
is bad. It's one of the worst.
Yeah, it was, at the time, it confused things so much more for me. It really, you know, made everything feel even more upside down than it already was. And, yeah, you know, for so long too, I legitimately loved this man. And so, you know, having him use sex as a weapon was, you know, it was tough, really tough. He's a very sick individual.
Yeah, really, really sick. And, you know, karma does have its way with everyone. So We'll just wait on karma.
It sure does.
Right. You know what, Beanie? Let's move on to something a little bit lighter here. Let's move on to the point where you were like, I'm taking my power back and I'm getting out of this. What was that? Mm-hmm. Take us through the journey of what that day looked like for you when you finally left. And, you know, what did it look like? Like, tell us everything.
Yeah. So, you know, just 3 years ago, actually 3 years ago, just this week, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had breast cancer. And I was at the lowest of lows. My abuse, the abuse had gotten worse. And then I had this on top of me. I was isolated more than I had ever been isolated from my family and my friends and everyone. And then I got this diagnosis. And there was a small part of me that thought, this is going to be what's going to snap him, you know, snap him too. And he's going to, you know, see how serious this is. And then another part of me was like, oh my God, he's killing me without actually, you know, putting his hands around my neck. He's killing me with the lifestyle that I've had to lead. So I've been in this fight or flight for an entire decade. And my body is fighting the wrong things. My body is fighting a day-to-day battle. And it needed to be fighting, you know, the cancer that was inside of me. And so I remember thinking, okay, fuck this. I'm going to do something about this. I had avoided the idea of escaping my city. It was, you know, my children are in that city. I own a home in that city. My family is there. I didn't want to leave. And I had tried to leave multiple times before, and I had always come back, and usually I came back with him. And so I just thought, you know what, I got to do something different. And so I had just moved into a new apartment by myself for the very first time in my life. I had, you know, signed a lease on my own. He had found me. I moved in the middle of the night. He found me the day I moved in and threatened my life that if I didn't let him move in with me, that he would kill me. So we were kind of on and off in this new apartment together. And I was already starting to think, I've got to do something different. So I started to flip through TikTok, like I did often at that time, because I was so isolated. I almost never left my house because he would show up in random places and, you know, roll up on me. And so I was scrolling through TikTok thinking, I just signed this lease. I have to pay the rent here, but maybe I could live on a farm, or I could live on a ranch, or I could work for rent and just get away just for a little bit. And I was scrolling through TikTok and I found a woman who escaped abuse from Oregon, and she moved to Florida and she bought herself a hobby farm. So she had, you know, ducks and cows and goats and dogs and chickens. And I made a comment on her post. She commented back. We got on a phone call. We talked for about 45 minutes. And by the end of the conversation, she invited me to her home, and she said, why don't you just come for a week, just get away. Just if you decide you want to stay longer, you can, but just pack for a week and just get away. And so I said, you know, if you're crazy enough to offer this, I'm crazy enough to accept it. I had nothing else that was, you know, that was keeping me where I was. And so I bought a ticket the next day. And I had 3 weeks from the time I bought the ticket to the time I left. And of course, you know, the abuser was in and out of my life in that 3 weeks. I contemplated canceling many times. And then finally, you know, it was like one Wednesday afternoon after, you know, we had multiple good days together. And he just up and said, I'm leaving and I'm not coming back tonight. And I just thought, you know what? Okay, no matter what, I am leaving. And so that following Tuesday, was my flight, and I had spent the weekend with him, actually. And he woke up on Monday and he said, "Where does this leave us?" And I said, "This leaves us nowhere." And he walked out the door and I never spoke to him again. I got up on Tuesday morning and I packed my bags and I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I didn't tell my children. I didn't tell anybody that I was leaving. And I got on the plane and I blocked him on everything. And, I had a stranger pick me up from the airport and I lived on a farm for several weeks. And I just rested. And when I tell you that I am so incredibly grateful that I had the opportunity that I had, to be able to rest, slept day and night. I slept and I took care of cows and chickens and I, you know, cleaned chicken coops and I raked and I, snuggled with dogs and I just was able to be, and I cried. It wasn't all rainbows and butterflies. You know, I cried and I, resisted responding. You know, the no contact thing is incredibly difficult. I wanted to contact him. I wanted to respond. I wanted to react. He was stalking my house. I had a Ring camera on my house and he was, you know, wearing a ski mask and stalking and he was contacting me all, you know, you can block people on anything and they can always find a way to get a hold of you. So, you know, he was messaging me on different phone numbers and he was creating new accounts and, you know, and so I just held strong and I was able to distract myself with new friends and new people around me. And you know, I wish I could tell you that I never heard from him after even months. You know, I had been here for a couple of months already and he found me. I created an LLC for myself in Florida. And through that LLC, he found the city that I was in. And he messaged me and he emailed me and messaged the same thing on multiple platforms and said, you know, "I want you to meet me at this bar at this time. I want you to wear this, sit here, bring this, do like all this stuff."
Ew.
And I didn't obviously do it, but he showed up. He showed up and he messaged me and he said, you know, he had a picture of where he thought I was. And he said, "I'm here. Where are you, little girl?" And then he flaunted it on social media. You know, he flaunted it on social media and said that he was in Florida doing, you know, something different. And I just got fed up. I was just, you know, I had to go back to San Diego for a cancer related surgery and he found me again. He was stalking me there. And so I just thought, you know what? Enough. I've had enough. I went up to the park, I grabbed my phone and I just started talking. "This is my story. This is who I am." You know, I've got at the time, I think I had, you know, 10,000 followers on TikTok. You know, "If anything happens to me, I want everybody to know that this is the man who did it." And that snowballed, into him continuously contacting me. And so then I showed his face and then I showed his business name. And then I showed, you know, I gave, you know, his full name, videos of him abusing. And that was one of the most powerful things that I have done. And to this day, he, you know, it took him a while. It took him a while, even after I exposed him, to stop contacting me. But it's been well over a year now that I have not heard from him. He had to shut down his namesake business. And he rebranded it and, you know, called it something else. He is off of social media. You will not find him on social media anywhere. You might find a picture of him on somebody else's account here and there. He, you know, he's lost a lot of friends. He's lost a lot of clients. But, you know, to be honest, he's still teaching jiu-jitsu. He still teaches women and children self-defense. And he is still fooling a lot of people.
They all do.
Yeah, yeah. They all do.
They all just leave you and go find other people that are unaware until those people become aware, and then they just keep recycling.
Yes, but, you know, I can tell you, it does warm my heart a little bit that if you Google his name, you very likely will see my face. You will see the bruises that he created. On my face, you will see him, you know, physically abusing me, videos of him abusing. So if you, you know, his name has definitely been tarnished, and that does warm my heart just a little bit.
Yeah. It warmed my heart too, after I had contacted, the last narcissist that I dated. I contacted his job multiple times. I even went above and beyond the CEO with this situation, and as far as I know, he no longer works there because they took his picture off the website. So
yeah,
yes, I know that
feeling. Probably a good idea.
So are you cancer free now?
I am cancer free. Yes, I am very diligent about my screenings, and I feel very, very fortunate. It was caught extremely early. Cancer free. And I kind of hold my breath every screening I go to. I hold my breath. But right now, no cancer. Thank you for asking.
Cancer free and fucking thriving, Beanie. Like you are.
Yeah.
Like,
yes. Yeah, cancer free and
mark
free.
You have won at life so far. I mean, if you were to die like today, like you won the gold medal, right? Beanie. Knows, like, I'm pretty sure Beanie's children were old enough and like living on their own by this time. I don't think she just up and abandoned her children during this situation. Have they come out to visit you in Florida?
They have not been to Florida yet. Nope.
But your mom has.
Not yet, but my mom has. Yep, my mom has been here a couple of times, and I've had many friends come. My children, my oldest just got a new puppy, and so he can't leave her. And my youngest is out living his best life. He's a big surfer, and so he travels, and, you know, he was in Bali and working on a surf camp in Bali. And
dang.
He's out living his best life. So, you know, I have been able to repair a lot of relationships since, you know, moving and getting myself across the country. And so that was one of the most important things for me. You know, there were a lot of people in my family that drew a hard line in the sand with me. And they said, you know, if he is in your life, then we are not. And I understand that. It was very difficult to accept that at the time. And I didn't know how to describe. I didn't know how to put words to what was happening to me. And I certainly didn't expect, you know, teenage boys to understand the cycle of abuse and, you know, why I continued to take him back. And, you know, they didn't understand that. And so that was the hard line that they drew in the sand with their mother. And quite honestly, it protected them from him. It really made it so that he was not, he wasn't around them. And I did everything I possibly could to make sure that I was keeping my children safe.
Yeah, and that's like a whole nother podcast within itself about educating people on those that keep going back into abusive relationships. There's a whole psychological factor that goes on there. I think the public needs to be a little bit more understanding, but they also need more education on it instead of just throwing people under the bus, because we're trying to fucking figure it out too. We don't know why we keep going back until we get educated and we start learning about all the manipulation, the love bombing, the trauma bonds. Like it's a lot, and it's not really a choice that we have at the time. It is this horrible cycle that we get stuck in, unfortunately. But Beanie, you are thriving. So not only did you leave that situation, but you have repaired your relationships with the people closest to you. You have fucking beat cancer. Yeah, fuck you, cancer. And you moved across the country and have a extra little thing going on your hand there.
I do. This is the best part of my story, and I'm so excited to tell you this part of my story. I met the most amazing
this
man.
This is the good part.
Yes, this is the good part. I met a man who we were just friends for a long time before anything happened. And it was at a time where we both were swearing off all relationships. Like everybody kept telling me, you need to learn to be alone. And I was like, I fucking hate being alone. I don't want to be alone. But I was like, okay. I was like, okay, I'm going to be alone. And then this man showed up, and he is just the kindest, most gentle, genuine, and I'd like to say that I bring that out in him, but the truth is, it's just who he is. And I love that about him. And so, so I am engaged to be married, and we have done so much. We were just talking about this the other day. I've been in Florida for about 2.5 years. And what we have accomplished in 2.5 years together without any drama, like when I tell you we have no drama in our life, we have no drama. And we have, we bought an RV together and we traveled the US for 3 months. We have driven across the country there and back three times. We are engaged. We have two new puppies. We built a new home. We have another business together. Like, we have done so much in 2.5 years, and he is just a gem of a partner. And he has my best interest at heart every second of every single day. And it is just a breath of fresh air. And I am
good.
Incredibly
you
fortunate.
Deserve to be happy. You really deserve to
I
be
do.
Happy. You know,
I do.
And
yes,
you know, a lot of people say like, and well, a lot of people can't say that they're thankful for, you know, their journey, the pain that they went through, the abuse that they went through. But you would have never met this man had you not went through what you went through. You wouldn't be where you're at in life right now without it. So, you know, there's always a reason for everything, and it can't always be dark. It can't always be raining, y'all. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, you know. And if you go to Beanie's TikTok or Instagram, like, her and her fiance are thriving. They are so cute together, y'all. You have to see it. I'm like, oh, that might make me want to like meet someone eventually. I don't know. Right now, I'm just like, ew, don't talk to me. Yeah. Don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I
you know what?
Come out to Florida eventually.
Yes, please do. I do want to say that my fiance was a huge part of my healing. He really he did so much. He distracted me from my own thoughts. He, you know, held my hand. He, you know, cried with me. He understood when I had to, you know, when I was trying to resist. And like, he, when I tell you, he just was a pivotal part of my healing journey. And I am just incredibly, just, I don't even have words for it because I'm so grateful for him.
Yeah. If you, when you guys go follow Beanie on social media, she posts a lot of photos and videos of when she was in her abusive situation and also when she first started our healing journey. And I mean, if you put a photo of that next to what Beanie looks like now, it is a drastic change. She looked like dead inside, like through her eyes, like she just looked like a shell of herself. And now you are glowing, you are beautiful, you got some extra bling bling on your hand. Like, I'm so happy for you.
thank you so much. I look back at those photos and I just can't even believe it.
I know. I look back at photos of myself too, and I'm just like, ooh, it's so funny how you just don't even realize at the time. But you know what? Here we are, glowing and thriving. So we're right at the hour mark of the show. Beanie, let everybody know where to find you, where to go to. Do you have a link tree or a website so that people can book coaching with you? Tell them everything you got.
Yes. So Instagram, I am Breakthroughs with Beanie. That's B-E-A-N-Y, not I-E, Y. And the best way to get a hold of me right now, I have a free trauma bond quiz in the link in my bio. And so if you think you might be in a trauma bond, I would suggest you start with that, taking that quiz. You can always message me. My DMs are always open. TikTok, same thing, same handle, Breakthroughs with Beanie. Also, the trauma bond quiz is in the link there as well. DMing me on TikTok, not as easy, but I would go over to Instagram for that. And then I have my website, breakthroughswithbeanie.com. And my website is up and running, and you can schedule a free call with me to talk about what your needs are and how I can help.
All right, Beanie, I appreciate you for coming on the podcast today. I'm sure that this won't be the last time that you come on. I've really have grown fond of you. You are an amazing person, and you deserve the best. As always, thank guys. You. Love yourself and love others. Be kind to others and be kind to yourself. We will be back next week with another episode, and I will drop all of Beanie's information in the show notes below. So all you have to do is click on it and go find her beautiful face. Thank you, Beanie.
Thank you.